When you save on auto insurance for driving safe with USAA Safe Pilot, you'll feel like a big deal. Even in a traffic jam. Save up to 30% with USAA Safe Pilot. Restrictions apply.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Madeira back on my show today, and we have special guest, Dr. Patty. How's it going today, Dr. Patty?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful. Surviving this pandemic, mostly staying at home, so staying away from people, which is definitely different, especially in our line of work. Even with doing a lot of telemedicine before this, it still was nice to go to the office once a week or so and see patients.
Sure.
So you know, we're all adjusting, and I think that pushes people into different areas where they notice places where maybe it's harder for them and their weaknesses and strengths. But yeah, it's awesome to have you back on the show. Last time we talked about male infertility. So if people are listening to this, you can go back and listen to that episode. For those of you who this is your first time meeting Dr. Habe, this is a naturopathic doctor in Arizona, in the greater Phoenix, Arizona area. She specializes in hormone optimization, pregnancy preparation, fertility, and general wellness. And she's committed to root cause healing through therapeutic supplementation, as well as targeted diet and lifestyle modifications. Her practice, Acetilo Integrative Health, provides integrative virtual consultations worldwide via webcam for those looking for a way to incorporate natural, proactive approaches to their healthcare. So welcome back to the show. And
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, this is awesome. Thanks for agreeing to do this. We're going to throw everybody a curveball today and talk about female infertility on a men's health podcast. And I get a lot of people messaging me from all over the U.S. saying, you know, we're a young, mostly healthy couple, and we're trying to get pregnant. And usually it's the men contacting me. And as we talked about in the last time when we chit-chatted here on the podcast, it takes two to tango, right? So if the one of the partners is doing something for fertility and the other one isn't, it typically is not a complete equation. So today we're going to talk about the other half of that equation, the female in this case. What are you seeing as what you think are some of the main root causes of female infertility today, and why? You know, why do you think this is such a big issue enough for a naturopathic doctor like yourself to specialize in infertility? I mean, I think a lot of people out there may be wondering, like, why, you know,
where's this coming from? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, infertility itself has just been increasing year after year after year, which is weird. When we look at trends, infertility has actually increased in every single age group. Over the past years, even in like the 15, 20 to 24 year olds, who is like the most abundantly fertile age group, they've even gone from like 4% infertility to more than 7% infertility rate. So it's something's weird, and something's weird's going on. And, you know, I think definitely comes back to a lot of kind of our naturopathic perspective on things. You know, what's going on in our environment? What is our stress level like? Are we being overstimulated more than we ever have been before? Are we being exposed to more toxins than we ever have been before? People are taking birth control for 15, 20 years and then deciding they want to get pregnant. You know, all of those just come together and seem to be causing this sort of perfect storm for an increase in infertility. And, you know, people are thinking they can jump off the pill and get pregnant the next month, some people it does work for. The majority, that's not necessarily the case. And there's a lot of kind of repairing that we have to do, not only to preserve hormones, but also to make sure the egg quality is gorgeous. We talked on your last podcast about sperm quality being super important, and also endometrial lining quality. So all those factors come together, and there's a lot of ways that it can go awry. So that's sort of my two cents on it.
So stress is a really big issue here, along with potentially toxins in the environment.
Yeah, definitely. So when we're looking at like glucocorticoids, our stress hormones, those actually inhibit the release of gonadotropin-releasing hormone. So you're getting less luteinizing hormone from the pituitary, and then that has a direct effect on both the ovaries and the testes. So stress is literally directly inhibiting your fertility. So whether, you know, people are stressed out about day-to-day life, they have a traumatic stress in their family, even good stress can be bad stress, such as people, you know, planning weddings. It's all good stuff, but it takes a toll on your body. People trying to conceive that are very stressed about the fact that they're not getting pregnant immediately. Those all actually do contribute, and they have a physiologic impact on the way that our bodies function.
Excellent. Yeah, I'd like to get more granular about that. But before we go there, I wanted to back up again to what exactly is a definition of physiologically infertility for females? What does that mean when we're talking about that?
Right. So infertility is kind of a harsh term in my opinion, and I kind of prefer the term subfertility because I think that a lot of times there's a reason that people are having trouble conceiving. And basically we're talking about infertility. We call it, we use the term a lot in the fertility world of fecundability, which is the probability to conceive during any menstrual cycle. And this is, and actually per menstrual cycle, people typically only have a 25% chance of fecundability or likelihood of getting pregnant. And this is why a lot of times we hear, you know, doctors say, wait 1 year to come in and then we'll start testing and looking into things. Because if you're looking at that fecundability statistic, 90 to 95% of the people looking at that should get pregnant in a year. I clinically tend to not see that, but I suppose I also work with people that want to be a bit more proactive about their approach. And I also think it's pretty brutal for people to go through 10, 11 cycles of actively trying and not get pregnant. I think that adds more stress onto the whole piece of it. But basically infertility is difficulty conceiving when you're actively trying. So it can be from genetics, lifestyle, you know, and it's all just that pituitary hypothalamal gonadal balance. But that's just, it's kind of a blanket term of everything.
So what we're looking at from an endocrinology point of view is the hypothalamus pituitary gonad, so axis, ovarian axis, HPO axis, and HPA axes being imbalanced and causing subfertility, in essence, is what.
Right, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what we find clinically, you know, is like when we are looking at infertility, typically we're looking at ovarian dysfunction. There's something that's not going on with the ovaries, whether it's the brain not signaling appropriately to the ovaries to create follicles, to release follicles. It also could be the follicles within that ovary are not quality follicles. So I would say the majority of subfertility cases are going to be related to ovarian dysfunction. Of course, we can have anatomical issues, you know, tubal and peritoneal issues from, you know, chronic endometriosis or pelvic inflammatory disease or you know, even like past ectopic pregnancies and stuff. But primarily the issues we're looking at is like ovarian dysfunction.
Okay, that's good to differentiate for people, especially I think for men, understanding their significant other, their wife, or a significant other's fertility potential. You said it's 25%, and then what is actually going on here and what we're looking at improving in their health. So when we are talking about beyond after the probability, and now we kind of have an idea of what could be going wrong and why, when should somebody start investigating? Obviously, people work with you, as you said, are going to be more aggressive. Should they wait after trying for 3 months? Or when do you typically recommend people reach out and not get into this cycle of basically anxiety around this.
Right. So, and again, that's completely tends to be different for every person. In a perfect world, I would say people actually would work with me 3 to 6 months before they're even ready to start trying to conceive, because it gives us time without them having that pressure of the clock ticking, to get their bodies ready, to properly detox, to make sure nutrients are optimized, to make sure that egg quality is looking gorgeous, to make sure that sperm quality is optimized. You know, ideally in a perfect world, we would take 6 months to get your body ready before you even started to try to conceive. That being said, you know, sometimes you do want to give it a go on your own. And I also respect that approach. You know, I think also people that are starting to get into their mid to late 30s, it's time to start looking at things. There's a lot we need to do to start protecting your eggs, because, you know, your uterus can house a pregnancy up to a older age, but your eggs, you have a bit of a lifespan on, and you need to be cognizant of where your egg quality and status is at.
Yeah, that's a great point, and kind of brings me to another one of my questions around age. And I'm sure a lot of men and women have this question and may have some preconceived beliefs around after X amount of years for a female, they are unable to get pregnant. I just read something, you know, social media is a beautiful thing because we get so much more information internationally. And I just saw a story of a 70-something year old couple, I believe it was. I think it was in a country in Africa. They use conventional fertility clinic medicines, I believe, and they were able to conceive after not having children their whole lives in late 60s, early 70s, right around there. I think the male was in his 70s and the female was late 60s or something. You saw that too?
I think that I've blipped through some. It's sounding familiar. So it's pretty crazy. And that's what's interesting, is the percentage of women that they're having babies at an older age is increasing. It's increased, you know, from 1.6% of people to 3% of all people since the late 80s. And, you know, now in the U.S., we're looking 2.6% of births are to women over the age of 40. So it's kind of interesting to see that shift, and even just the increase in women who are having babies from the age of 40 to 44 has vastly increased since 2007. So it's definitely possible, and it's great because we have more things we can do to support the body to have those pregnancies. And again, the body is physically capable of carrying those. It's just kind of identifying how, you know, genetically normal and healthy your eggs are. You know, and for example, it's so, and this is one thing I do like to address with fertility is, you know, I do think there's people get very freaked out about age and everything. And the reality is you are at some increased risk. I mean, the miscarriage rate is going to be elevated the older you are. Down syndrome incidence increases. Fertility rate per month increases, and the percentage of genetically normal eggs goes down as you increase in age. That's statistically accurate, but we're not saying that it's impossible. And it's possible to have just really healthy pregnancies at a later age, but with that caveat of, I think it's important to be taking really good care of yourself if children aren't on, you know, your agenda till you're getting into like your mid to late 30s and early 40s. You need to be paying attention to that egg quality, or be opening to potentially needing to utilize an egg donor in the future.
Yeah, very good points to make. And I think a lot of people, this is something where when they're in their 20s, similar to men, everybody thinks, well, I'm invincible and I'll do what I got to do to get through and exercise hard and maybe overtrain and eat what I want, drink what I want, and take a birth control pill, and then come off the pill after we, you know, married, and now it's have the kids. And then it's like, oh, wow, we're having trouble getting pregnant. So I think that's a good reminder of finding.
We made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
it's time to switch.
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for. Restrictions apply.
your motivation earlier than later to optimize your health. If for, you know, fertility and children are something you want in your future and you're listening to this now thinking, okay, well, you know, maybe staying up to 4 in the morning and eating whatever I want out of a bag or a box and microwave food or something like that, or fast food for that matter, is not going to really help me get there. Not to say that people eat junk food don't have kids, but I think that anything that you can do to optimize your health, as you're mentioning, sounds like it's going to improve fertility.
Absolutely. Well, and it's, you know, being aware of, you know, I kind of like to say, like, you never know what hand you're dealt, really, when we're looking at ovaries and we're looking at fertility. You know, you can look at something called antral follicle count, which is an ultrasound, and it looks at how many follicles are maturing in your ovaries. And, you know, we like to see them at least over 10 at minimum. A lot of times, you know, in the younger age groups, we'll see like up to 20, 22 follicles. And basically just knowing that can let you know, moving forward what you're looking like, because you can have premature ovarian insufficiency and you can be, you know, 28, 30 years old, but your ovaries look like that of a typical 43-year-old woman. So that's another reason to, you know, if you don't want to go out that, you know, full step of like freezing your eggs or something, there's a lot you can do just to kind of check in every year or two and see, you know, how your follicles are looking, you know, where your AMH level is at, and just kind of keep up with your own fertility measures and make sure you don't need to be taking additional precautions.
Yeah. Tell us more about AMH and its importance and what that stands for.
Definitely. So AMH is anti-mullerian hormone. And this is a hormone that's made by early developing follicles. And basically the more AMH, the better. It means, you know, the better quality your eggs are, the more AMH you're going to have around. So typically we always want to see that greater than 4. I mean, that's like ideal situation. When we start kind of seeing it to go down, we really want it to be more than 2. If it's less than 2, we really got to get to work and support your egg quality. And there's a lot we can do from an integrative approach to improve that number at that point. That's kind of our soft zone. When we get to an AMH of less than 1, it's pretty much going to be an immediate reproductive endocrinology referral, only because it's important, in my opinion, that if this woman wants to conceive, you're giving them every chance they have of conceiving. And it may mean that they're going to do a truly integrative approach. So they're going to have to perhaps go through IVF, but there's a lot we can do to help improve that egg quality before the egg harvesting takes place. And hopefully they'll get more and better quality eggs from that retrieval.
I see. Yeah. So it can be helpful to determine if they need to do IVF or not. Is that
right? Because if that AMH is starting to go down, it means you're not making a lot of follicles or eggs in your ovaries. And so we kind of need to take action and do something about it, because we have less to work with.
And do you typically see women over age 40 having lower AMH as a general rule?
It tends to decrease. Yes. Yes, it does. It does. But again, there's variability in that. So, you know, it's not something to be completely, you know, scared of, but it is cool because you can, I mean, there's tests, at home tests, like by like Modern Fertility or Let's Get Checked. And you can literally do like a finger prick at home and find out where your AMH levels are at.
Yeah, that's great. Especially during this whole like stay at home orders or
right. And IVF clinics are closed. I mean, there's still stuff you can be doing to, it's actually a perfect time to be working on it.
Right. Instead of binge watching Netflix and playing video games till 3 or 4 in the morning or you know, eating all the things in the house, which is hard not to do when I think, you know, something happens when you're forced to stay in, it's like this right. hibernation hormone kicks in or something and start eating more carbs. And now they're calling it like the COVID-15. So.
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah, it's like the freshman 15. That. So we get the COVID-15.
That's really funny. Yeah. Something to that.
Yeah. So, you know, we could, you know, people can be using this time in this year to say, okay, well, you know, I can either come out of 2020 with pre-diabetes and being overweight, or I can come out of this being a lot healthier and optimize my hormones. And if fertility is your goal, then by all means, you know, check your AMH, work with Dr. Patty, and get this stuff dialed in. So as far as a workup, besides AMH and looking at the follicles and everything, what other labs do you typically say are non-negotiable that we absolutely need to have completed on the table looking at?
Yeah. So, and that being said, AMH is not something even that necessarily you would have to run right off the bat. It's just kind of fun because we can run it if that's a concern, and that basically tells people where they are at ease. I mean, but really when we're starting working with people, we're starting basic. We're looking at a CBC. We're looking at their thyroid. We're making sure that antibodies aren't present, because we find that Hashimoto's can cause a lot of issues with miscarriages or recurrent pregnancy loss. So that's really important to check out and start addressing right off the bat. Also, we take a peek at insulin and fasting glucose just to make sure that that's all looking good. Iron levels, vitamin D, of course. And then we just take a peek at hormones. We do like a day 3 estrogen, luteinizing hormone, and follicle stimulating hormone, and then a day 21 progesterone. And from the FSH and the estrogen, that also can tell us a lot about kind of the age of what's going on. If the estrogen is super high, and the FSH is not really responding, that means that we kind of have a low chance of pregnancy. So we can kind of start really getting an inkling to what's going on in the fertility world, even just with that estrogen and the FSH ratio, before we even have to dive into AMH.
Excellent. So we're looking at these other labs first, and FSH and LH and estrogen and progesterone. And then later we can look at AMH if needed.
And antral follicle counts or ultrasounds just to see if there's any adhesions, or hysterosalpingogram to make sure those fallopian tubes are open. So you might be ovulating, but that egg isn't coming down those tubes and going into your uterus. But those are kind of down the line items. This is just kind of basic where we start, which is probably pretty similar to most naturopathic workups.
Right. Well, excellent. Yeah, because I know for me, I mean, even just talking to male and female patients, and they usually say, hey, yeah, I've had a complete workup. I worked with such and such practitioner. And I think it's like the game of telephone with patients is they have good intentions and they think they've had a complete workup, and then they come to us and it's like, yeah, you know, you just had estrogen and progesterone and you didn't.
Yes. On a random day of their cycle. And also while they were still taking birth control, I've literally seen that.
Right. Which it's like,
it's crazy. And it does get a more in depth. If we have people that have been trying to conceive for a longer amount of time, or let's say they've gone through IVF cycles and have been unsuccessful, then we're going to dig in deeper. We're going to look at antiphospholipids, endothrombophilias, any kind of autoimmune diseases that might be at play. I mean, you can really get pretty deep in your investigation there. And that is one thing, as I would say, is, you know, when you're looking at fertility and you're looking at preconception care, it is important to make sure you're working with somebody who does have an idea with fertility, because especially that AMH is creeping down, you know, you want to make sure that if you don't have a lot of time, that you're getting all the cards on your table. And you also want to make sure you're working with somebody that's like kind of knows when to say, okay, it's time to get a reproductive endocrinologist on board. I'm here, we're still working together, but you know, like there's a time where we're like, we need to take a truly integrative approach to this. Cause it's all about them and conceiving that baby. That's their dream. And it does have a timeline.
Yeah, I think that's important to say, because they're definitely, we tend to attract in some cases patients that are like, drugs are evil, I don't want to use anything in Western medicine, pharmacy, any of that. And I think that when we look at their motivations and re-educate and reframe that, hey, your motivation is to have a child, you know, you're 39 years old or you're 45 years old, your AMH is 1. Or 1.5, mm-hmm. and you know, there are all these things going on. It's important to have all hands on deck, as you're saying. So why not use a conventional medical fertility clinic as well and use both together, and you have the best of both worlds. Are there certain conditions that you would say absolutely let's not try to get pregnant for, you know, you already mentioned let's work together for at least 3 to 6 months before trying to conceive, but are there any conditions that come to mind that are absolutely, hey, you know, it's really not in your best interest until this gets resolved, or it can't be resolved, so it's really not in your best interest to have children? I mean, I know people hate to hear this, but I'm just thinking from an overall point of view where, you know, it could be, for example, if someone already has diabetes and then their diabetes gets worse during pregnancy or something and there's a complicated pregnancy. I'm just curious what your input into that, because we're hearing about a lot more on the opposite end of this, you know, once people have a child and they're going into go have a child in the hospital or with a midwife and a birthing center, we're hearing about more complicated pregnancies in the last 10 years, or at least I have been. And I'm wondering what your take is on that.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say there's a lot of things that, you know, you're like red flag, absolutely not. I mean, the big pieces of those are going to be primarily people with awareness of genetic issues they have, that they know they're a carrier, and, you know, like cystic fibrosis is a big one, you know, and then they have to ethically decide, you know, together, are they willing to bring a child into this world that potentially has this genetic, you know, defect. So that, I would say that's probably the most common thing I see. When it comes to something like diabetes, though, when people want to have these babies, I mean, I've seen people do tremendous work at turning the hemoglobin A1Cs around. I've seen people with positive ANAs, they, you know, go on the autoimmune paleo diet, they bring those back to negative, and go on to have healthy pregnancies. So I tend to be pretty optimistic, but again, it tends also to be what work they're going to put into it. And typically, I do believe that people that are seeking out this integrative approach tend to be people that are going to give it their all, and they tend to have very healthy pregnancies and postpartum. I don't know why we're seeing that more in hospitals. I don't know if it's because we're noticing it more. I don't know if we're testing more, so we're seeing more things. I don't know. I think it's an interesting observation.
Because they are testing a lot more for genetics now than they did 30, 40 years ago, because we have the technology.
So. It's inexpensive. I mean, for example, insurance used to only cover genetic testing if you were over the age of 35, you were a high-risk pregnancy, then they would cover it. But now, I mean, it's just an easy blood draw, and they can take a peek at the chromosomes of your baby at 10 weeks. I mean, and it's $200, $300, which in the grand scheme of things, how complex that is pretty incredible. So yeah, I would say, you know, and I think some OB offices take a more, they're running labs more often. They're always looking at, you know, CBCs, whereas you have other OBs or midwives that are just doing a blood pressure, a urinalysis, and a fetal Doppler every visit. You know, there's just such a spectrum of intervention levels, I guess I would say.
Yeah, it definitely seems like how comfortable that practitioner is and what their, you know, experience level is with working in the system. And, you know, obviously a medical OBGYN is going to be more medical and probably see more pathology potentially. So they're going to be a little bit more cautious than potentially a midwife who's been doing this for 35, 40 years.
Who just intuitively has a feeling of like, this is going to be a problem, this is going to be okay. Yeah, right. I agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe some people listening to this don't know that there are midwives out there and that they're actually trained on par with like a nurse midwife. And it's, you know, a whole graduate school training, and it's very intensive. And so that is an option in some places.
It is. And I think what people like, and you can do a midwife and an OB. I mean, those are also a combination approach. You can have a doula along with your conventional OB. Like, there's lots of options. Also, I would say shop around for OBs. I mean, I recently gave birth this year, and I can tell you that my OB was extraordinarily different than other OBs that I'd known in the past or other people had. I mean, you know, we had very little interventions, very little ultrasounds and stuff, where other people, it seemed like they were constantly getting blood work done. They were constantly getting ultrasounds, just all, you know, and it was just like, what's, and it, we both ended up with very healthy pregnancies, thankfully. And, you know, but there ended up being a lot more chaos with all the testing that was constantly being done. So it's kind of interesting, you know, there's that fine line of like ignorance is bliss versus making sure that you're, everything's looking good.
Right.
But this, and this sounds kind of funny, but this is also my mentality is I was like, you know, cause as naturopathic doctors, I mean, I like to test, I like to get numbers. You probably do too. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, when things are going and changing, if you obsess too much on numbers, you can find incidental findings that maybe are a misread or not as significant as you might think. And when it comes down to it, I look at my 3-month-old son and I'm like, I want, you know, how's he doing? You know? And I'm like, well, it's not like we're running blood tests on him, you know, like we, they mm-hmm. do the bilirubin testing and that's it. You know, it's not like he's never had a CBC or a CMP. It's just, you know, we just observe and make sure, you know, he's pooping and peeing and his heart sounds good. You know, it's just, it's interesting how much you can intervene if you want to with diminishing returns.
Yeah. And I think this goes into a whole other topic around the medicalization of pregnancy and birth,
oh, yeah.
which mm-hmm. is like, if, you know, people can watch documentaries out there that
yes.
were done really well.
Being born. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the hospital makes a lot more money on cesarean, and that's not to say that it's bad that if someone had a cesarean birth, no judgment, but we're just saying that mm-hmm. first of all, pregnancy and birth is a natural life process, obviously, but mm-hmm. I think it's important to say that these things are just, it's how we function as a species. And yeah. what has happened is as humans is we have shoved this into a hospital system, which is a disease care system, a sick care system,
yep.
and said, how can we fit this into this insurance model and make money off of it? And it's a lot easier versus somebody having a 24 to 48 hour birth to, hey, let's do cesarean and move on to the next one. And they're yep. going to make a lot more money off of that procedure as they yep. would a surgery. And it's procedure-based medicine is what makes hospitals money, which is why surgeons get paid more than primary care doctors. So
yep.
just going back to, you know, it's not a disease, but there's, I think, a lot of anxiety even after they're, you know, a mother is pregnant, especially new mothers. A lot of anxiety, and I have a lot of midwife friends, and I have a daughter, and we had a midwife and a home birth and, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And so I got to witness all of this. And during that time, there was a power outage for days,
oh,
and then the birth was late and all this stuff. And our midwife was like, oh, you guys are good. You know, no need to worry. And the stand-in OBGYN was like, we want to induce you tomorrow if the baby hasn't come. And I was like, you know what? You know, we're not going to do that. So mm-hmm. I think it's just your cosmology, your philosophy, and what makes you feel comfortable. If it makes you feel comfortable right. to have a hospital birth, be comfortable and do what you need to do to have all hands on deck in that basically 100%. World. And just for the listeners, it wasn't like we were 1,000 miles away from a hospital. We were like 20 minutes from the hospital, and midwives have medications.
right.
They have medications they can put an IV in. So,
and they'll send you to the hospital if you need to go to the hospital.
Yeah. So
yeah.
the point being is that we had all precautions there, but I think right. what's happened is, and this spills into the fertility world, which is why I'm mentioning it, where when things become too medical, it's like you're saying, like if we just took everybody's labs every other day, we would find all kinds of crazy stuff for every person, even if they're not trying to have a child. And
right.
Point being is that there's the outliers. And then that's why in medicine, you look at trends like, okay, does this make sense for this person's symptoms and the trends and everything? But what tends to happen is when you ask somebody who is trained in dealing with serious pathologies to deal with something that is like a natural life process, and they medicalize it and they pathologize it, it becomes more anxiety producing for the patients, for the new parents. So I just want to put that out there to maybe plant a seed and maybe say, hey, this, let's back up a minute. What are we even talking about here? You know, we're talking about fertility. We're talking about pregnancy. We're talking about birth. This is how we evolve through time. And most of the reasons why people died in childbirth was because doctors weren't washing their hands. And they would go from like birth room to birth room and do like without gloves, do another birth. And the doctor invented hand washing, was just using like lye and water between these births. And it was like, hey, Eureka, not as many women are dying in childbirth. So I think when you know the history and you know the how and the why, it's not so much of, oh, okay, this is a scary thing and all that. And maybe I'm out of place for some people as a guy talking about childbirth, but you know, we all were born, you know? So, and I think that witnessing birth changes people. So if you're a father or a soon to be father, it changes you. When you're like, okay, like this is what we do as animals. If you watch the cat or the dog that you have a pet give birth, this is, and some people would argue, evolutionary biologists, this is our reason for existing, is to procreate, right?
Yep.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, and I think that's such a hugely empowering thought. And I remember even just, you know, in my pregnancy, you know, I looked around, I was at a church one day and I, you know, obviously emotions come up about it all. And I looked around me and I was like, every single one of these people was born. So like, we've been doing it, we're made to do it. So the fear then goes away. But also to piggyback on something that you were just saying also is, you know, with the conventional interventions, and one thing I do like to preach is, even if people have tried letrozole, Clomid, gonadotropins to try to stimulate this pregnancy, it's still a great opportunity to bring in integrative medicine at that point, because you can still help improve outcomes. It's not like, you know, conventional approaches are the penultimate, that's the end. You know, I say, I've worked with a lot of people who have had IVF before unsuccessfully, we work together and then they have a successful cycle. So it's you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a precursor, it can be post supportive or intermediary support as well. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think a lot of people may have already tried those things and, you know, maybe they did IUI and they needed to do IVF with some natural medicine approaches and diagnostics on board before they do IVF. Yeah. And someone like you could say, hey, you know, let's slow down. Let's look at some things again here, some diagnostics, and get some natural medicines and nutrients
on board. Here's a really good example of that. I have a good case actually, is so I, you know, you've seen people and they've been on birth control for a long time, have, you know, these progestin only IUDs, which basically really thin the lining of your endometrium. Those are removed and then they have no period whatsoever. So their doctor gives them synthetic progesterone to induce a period and then gives them letrozole to help create all these follicles. And that's all well and good, but you just made them have a period of the lining that they literally don't hardly have. And then you made all these eggs and they don't have anywhere to implant to, because you just shed what tiny little endometrium they had left. So I just think that's kind of a cool case study to show you can give people a bunch of drugs, but it doesn't necessarily mean its work is going to be super effective, where we can use herbs to enhance that endometrial lining. We can make sure the egg quality is looking really pretty so that when you do those measures, it does the trick.
Spectacular. Yeah, that's a great point to make around, you know, the medication only approach. And I see that a lot across the board in medicine, where the body isn't strong enough or vital enough for the medications to actually work. And when you're talking about something like female fertility here, even more important. So what are some great fertility tips that people could take away, take home tips today that they could start right after listening to today's podcast?
Yeah, definitely. I would say, you know, a huge one is going to be to start cleaning up your environment. So start working on those home detoxes. Make sure you're, you know, drinking clean water, you're using clean products, you're eating organic foods. Focus on, you know, increasing fruits and veggies. The more antioxidants you have, the better you can, you know, squash those reactive oxidative species and, you know, really support your egg status. Not drinking alcohol can help significantly, as well as marijuana and cocaine also do have a very negative impact on fertility. You know, and it's something, you know, people say, oh, I'll stop when I get pregnant. But marijuana, we talked about, I think, quickly, even significantly impacts sperm quality. So that's an important thing to kick. And then the last big, big thing I would say is to really work on where your mental space is. People that, you know, come to fertility with a sense of fear or, you know, anxiousness, you know, you kind of have to stop and kind of get your head right in order to allow your body for that good contraception process. And I think we also have talked about this before briefly, is, you know, you have to be in that good mental space in order to be a parent, you know, and that starts preconception.
Yeah, not doing lines of cocaine up till 5 a.m. watching the sun come up with a bottle of Jack Daniels. Are you seeing a lot of people in your time working in the fertility space who are, you know, regular cannabis smokers or cannabis users and drinking too much or using too much cocaine? Are those common threads, or one more than the other?
Cocaine, not common. Marijuana is growing every month, I think, in commonality, just because it's, you know, legal places now. But just like alcohol, just because it's legal doesn't mean that it's good for you. And so that is something that we're kind of, you know, I definitely would say, if you're going to try to conceive in the next 3 to 6 months, time to really decrease drinking and definitely stop marijuana altogether.
So this is
specifically
all part...
it's THC. Yeah.
Right. So this is all part of the pregnancy preparation that you specialize in, and helping people clean up their diets and their lifestyles and their habits. And, you know, if they're smoking,
get those cycles back. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Smoking cigarettes or marijuana or something. Within that, what would you say, you know, for water? You mentioned water first, so I'm going back to that.
Yeah.
Is there a specific type of water filter? I know a lot of people in our community of functional medicine, naturopathic medicine practitioners talk about like Berkey water filter, other water filtration systems. Yep. Is there one recommend?
Berkey's always my go-to. Mm-hmm. It's just easy and foolproof, no installation. It's a bit of an eyesore, but other than that, it is wonderful, you know, or reverse osmosis water, as long as you're adding back in minerals to it. But usually I just say Berkey is the way to go.
Awesome. Okay. So people can get their Berkey water filters and start doing that. Yeah. I think that a lot of people don't recognize how important these things, they seem kind of trivial, like, okay, well, I need to drink more water. I need to drink the right kind of water, not in a plastic water bottle. But, you know, going back to what we talked about on the first time we did an interview for male fertility and talking about all the xenoestrogens and plastics and things like that. It's,
yeah.
You know, how much is that play in the pregnancy preparation for women?
Yeah, huge. I mean, I think there's more research on it affecting sperm quality just from everything I've seen. I mean, I feel like we went through like 15 different studies in that last conversation that we had. For female fertility, same kind of department. Again, there's more research to proving sperm, but I don't know why that one exactly follows suit. Those are still endocrine disruptors, and it's a hormonal issue.
Mm-hmm. And going back to stress, so a lot of people now are talking about COVID-19 being like the COVID generation, and a baby boom is kind of the whisper on the street, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I know people are trying to get pregnant now, and that's why I wanted to do this podcast with you, to get this information out to them. What is your advice around kind of managing this time that could be really stressful for some people, and they're trying to conceive for first child or second child or what have you?
Right. Great question. So I think it's a fine time for anybody to conceive, as long as they're ready to conceive. If this is scary and stressful and feels horrifying to people, I don't think that this is the time to conceive. this is the time to focus on you, your relationship, be healthy, enjoy each other, and prepare yourself in other ways, and wait till you're in that comfort zone that you feel, you know, not as as fearful moving forward. But that being said, people that are ready to go, I don't see an issue with the time, you know, but while we're seeing a lot of intercourse increasing during this quarantine, we're also seeing a lot of substance abuse increasing during this. So just really making sure that you're at least being careful and mindful of what you're putting into your body and that potential 2-week period when you don't know if you're pregnant or not, you know, still treat yourself as if you were.
Yeah, you definitely want to prevent something like fetal alcohol syndrome or some devastating result like that. If someone's binge drinking every day, you know, the day drinking that people are doing right now and justifying because they're home alone with their kids or they're home alone with their significant other. So I like what you're saying about the mindset. And I think that's just so important for, you know, creating a healthy family unit and from day one or before day one, and then general health. I mean, to have a healthy mindset every morning, taking time, even if it's just 2 minutes, and saying, okay, you know, what can I do to change my mindset or get into a good spot before checking my email or calling somebody or doing what you got to do that day for work or whatnot. So I think that a lot of people come to doctors like us and they're like, okay, well, what herbs can I take? I'm already taking these herbs, or I'm trying to biohack myself, or, you know, what vitamins or other things can I do? And it's like, whoa, hold on a second. You know, what's the other stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And maybe they're already filtering their water, but maybe there's all this kind of like fear or anxiety around all these nuanced things. So I think the way that we approach these things also is important in a way that is not, you know, overly fearful or anxious, but also having a good mindset, a positive mindset, a positive outlook for the future, for the day moving forward. And, you know, whether you believe it or not, I mean, a lot of athletes use visualization and meditation and other forms of this to be successful. And I mean, you can just basically turn on a documentary about Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, and these athletes, these stars that people idolize, talk about these things. So, you know, sometimes it takes for us to look at the people that we want to emulate, even if we're not going to be like them, to see what worked for successful people, what healthy people do what healthy people do, what successful people do what successful people do, to get those similar results, even if where you're standing seems 1,000 miles away. So with that said, are there any parting thoughts around fertility and, you know, you talked about, you know, if this is a stressful time, wait. Are any parting thoughts or hope for people that are like, hey, you know, I'm late 30s, I'm early 40s, we're trying to get pregnant, we've been trying for a while, and maybe you have a short case study of someone in their 40s that has gotten pregnant working with you that you could share?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I guess what I would say is start, take action. I think that's like the biggest thing that I would say. People sit around and they worry a lot, and the frustration is maybe their OB isn't responsive to what they want to do. I'll have people that have asked their OB for stuff. They're trying, it's stressing them out. You know, and we can go and we can get labs ordered for them. We can figure out what labs they can order for themselves. And you know, that gives us the information, lets us get started working. You don't have to wait for something to go wrong. You know, if you're starting to try and you're feeling stressed, or you know that, you know, you're 37 and, you know, in 2 years you want to start trying, but you're a little nervous because maybe people in your family have had trouble getting pregnant, let's start working together now. You know, like, let's start laying that foundation. And, you know, I would just say, you know, as far as particular case studies go, I couldn't tell you one because they happen all the time. I constantly have people come in their late 30s and early 40s and put the work in and, you know, and get pregnant. We work with people with recurrent pregnancy losses as well. So people that have had, you know, 1, 2, 3 miscarriages, which is more common than also people like to discuss as well. But my biggest thing is just, you know, get started. If you're starting to feel uncomfortable about things or concerned, take action and start working on it. Don't like just sit in fear and wait to talk to your doctor about it, or not let your doctor not listen to you. You know, like, definitely my big thing in health in general is just be an advocate for yourself. Your doctor doesn't know more than you do about you. So just because that one person's not listening, like, go out and find that solution for yourself.
Yeah, well said. I like that advocacy for yourself. And I think some personalities are really good at it and others are not. And, you know,
it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. It is hard.
And I will say, I do have people that come to me and I end up being their advocate because my goal is to help them. So I don't care if I'm working with another naturopath, a nutritionist, an acupuncturist, a reproductive endocrinologist. Like, we all need to be working together to benefit that patient and get them the results that they need. So I'll write letters to whoever I have to, you know, or, you know, sometimes they just don't know what to ask for, why they're asking for it. And when you can provide them, well, this is what you're looking for and this is why, then we get more of a collaborative approach. But they just kind of need that support. Cause, you know, if you don't go to medical school, or even if you, I do work with doctors and nurses too. And, you know, they're medically trained, but not in this department. So, you know, we all have our strengths and you just have to know what yours are and what yours are not and how to supplement those.
Well said. Yeah, it does definitely take a team. And I think having someone like you in their corner to advocate for them can help them get the results that they're looking for. Because oftentimes people, it's like, they don't have a map for this. There's no real guidelines. It's like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'll see, like, I'll go find an OBGYN and go work with them. And then when that doesn't work, they may feel hopeless. So, you know, a lot of this is about giving people hope and giving them the tools to get those results that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it's really important, I think, for people to know that this is possible. And I think a lot of people, you know, like you said, miscarriages are common. And I think a lot of people mm-hmm. internalize that as a couple and kind of, there's a lot of maybe guilt or shame or emotions around that that need to be unpacked and just realize that, hey, this actually happens a lot.
One in four pregnancies don't go past 10 weeks. I mean, it's literally that common. And I don't think people know that. And I think a lot of people suffer in silence. And I think especially during this coronavirus, people are still obviously experiencing miscarriages. And it's really hard because they don't have their support system like they do. So I do also like to just let people know that, you know, one miscarriage is not abnormal and you shouldn't feel dysfunctional for it. But if it's concerning to you, like, start working with somebody and, you know, talk to people, you know, that's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, you know, I'll tell you, having a child is truly a miracle, but miracles happen every single day. And I think that's the take home to focus on fertility. Like, it is, it's a miracle and it is, so much has to go right, but it happens every day. It really does.
Yeah. It's a great, great point. And I think it's a good mindset for people to have, you know, in that awareness that you had the light bulb go off, you know, standing in church and realizing that, hey, all these people were born. And it sounds, you know, it's like one of those aha moments that everybody kind of knows in the back of their head, but it's not something that we think about every day when we're running around doing all the things we do on an everyday basis, right? We're not like, uh-huh. Oh my God, we all were, you know, we all kind of came babies. From our moms and we all were babies and being in diapers and breastfeeding or having formula or whatever. And, mm-hmm. You know, I think to step back and have that awareness is like, is powerful. So
it is. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I wanted to, again, thank you for coming on the show. Everybody who is on the internet, you know, I think everybody is, but if you're not on Instagram, get on Instagram and follow Dr. Patty Havey at dr.patty, P-A-T-T-I underscore Havey, H-A-E-V-E. And that's also your Facebook too, right, Dr.
Yeah, Patty. Mm-hmm.
And then her website is ocotillointegrative.com. So OCOTILLO integrative.com. So you can check her out there. And everybody should check out the other episode we already recorded for men's fertility. And I recommend all couples listen to both of these together, side by side or back to back, so that you can get a full view of everything we're talking about. Because often, as we mentioned during today's podcast, if somebody, usually the female, is getting the full workup and a lot of the weight's on them to pull this cart alone. So if you can start working together as a couple to optimize your hormone health for fertility health, it's going to do a lot more good long-term to make sure that sperm health is there and overall hormone health for the male too. So that's the tie into men's health. Again, thank you so much for being on the show, everybody. This was—
thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was spectacular. And everybody, this is Dr. Patty Habe, fertility for females. Until next time, please share the podcast with friends and family, and we will talk to you soon. Take care. Now, here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.